You're listening to The Purple Mystic, a podcast for the modern witch, with your host, Natalie Sedgwick. Asked for The Purple Room Apothecary, I am your host, Natalie, and today I am interviewing Hodgson. Now, Jen, you have a business, Intuitive Jen Hodgson. Why don't you say hi to everybody?
Hello, everyone. Hope everyone is having a great day and enjoying the beautiful weather.
It is nice. It's a little overcast here in Texas today, but it was a little overcast at the start yesterday at Witch Fest in Austin, and then the sun broke out and it became a beautiful day towards the end. So I'm hoping that happens again today because it's kind of gray.
We actually have a really nice day here in Indiana. It's about 60 degrees here, so it's really nice. It's not hot. So
not hot.
And everybody is out of it. Exactly. It's perfect. Now, if it could stay that way all year long, I would be absolutely happy.
Yes, I hear you. We need to all move to Jamaica because the weather is like 70 to 75 year round and it's gorgeous. Wow. We'll just take over the place. So, Jen, sure. What I wanted to talk with you about is there's a couple of things because you have a wide breadth of experience and so forth. You are a medium. You do automatic writing, which is something I'm fascinated with because I've never done that. I don't know how to make that work or if that's something that just comes naturally or if it's something that can be learned. And I wanted to get a little bit too into your paranormal investigations because I'm finding that there is a vein of people in the community, in the witchy community, that think that are poo-pooing paranormal investigation as sort of a trendy, hot thing that people are doing just to basically bring attention to themselves. And I'm thinking to myself, maybe with the upswing in some of the shows that are out there now, I can see why they would think that. But for me, it's something that comes naturally to a witch to connect with spirits that have moved on. And I think a lot of people that do these paranormal investigations are never on TV, don't talk about it. They're not, you know, they don't have a show on Travel Channel or anything like that, like Zach Bagans. And so they're doing it because they're trying to bring some level of solace to the people they're doing it for. One, to affirm that what they're experiencing is real and they're not crazy, because I think a lot of people are afraid to talk about it because they think people are going to think they're crazy, but also to help clear that out. And so I wanted to have you talk about that a little bit in terms of what is it like to be a paranormal investigator as a witch and a medium?
Sure. It's different, but to answer your first part of the question about some people, you know, thinking that it's all hyped up because of the media, in some cases that is. We have found that there are groups who go into a situation and they actually can make it worse.
Absolutely. Talk about that.
And
talk about why it makes it worse. What is it that they're doing that makes it worse versus somebody who can actually clear it out? Do you see what I'm saying? Like, I've even seen that on some of the paranormal shows where they say, well, we had, you know, a shaman come in and they, you know, or this, you know, witch group, and they came in and they saged it. It was great for a couple of days. And then all of a sudden it was back and it was worse than ever. Talk about why, as a paranormal investigator, you think that happens.
The reason why it makes it worse is because...
Oh, you kind of cut out there.
People are doing, they want to just see what they can capture. Their real goal is that they really have no interest in helping the family or anybody else for that matter. Some people have turned this into like their own little show by putting it on YouTube. And that's what makes it worse, is because the family is left in limbo and they just want help, where they have some teams that come in and they just want to document what's there. They don't care. That's what makes it worse. Then they come in. You have some groups who will come in and they will call whatever is there out. And that's something that you never want to do. You never want to call something out, because at the end of the night, you're the one going home and the family is stuck with the aftermath that happens. And so normally when all of that happens, that's when our group gets called.
Well, and that's what I was talking about is, you know, there are people I've seen on the shows where they say, well, we had somebody come in and they cleared the house for us. They saged it or they did this or that. And, you know, it was great for a few days and then it came back worse. Why do you think that happens? What do you think that these groups are doing differently or that is making it not effective?
It's not only what the groups going in and clearing, because we can go in and clear a home out, but it's also what the family is doing after. You know, I'm a firm believer in empowering people to take control of their life. And some of the things that happen with the paranormal has things that happened to them in the past. And they need to kind of deal with those issues. And if they don't deal with those issues, then the problem still continues. And the other thing, too, is if they've got things that they're doing in their own life that maybe isn't the best of what they're doing, then, and if they don't change that, that's still going to continue. Okay. It just kind of puts a Band-Aid on it. I mean, it's nothing that the paranormal group or anything else is doing wrong when it comes to a cleansing or bringing somebody in who can clear out the space. It's the fact that the family,
you're feeling their behavior still occurring,
taking responsibility for their own actions and their own space. Gotcha. And following through with what they were told to do. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Now let's talk about how paranormal investigation is perceived. You know, here's the dichotomy that I'm seeing. You have people like Patty Negri, who is a witch. She bills herself as the Good Witch of Hollywood. She's on Zach's show, and she is a friend of mine. She's a wonderful person. She's really, I mean, if you ever have a chance to meet her, you should, because she has a fabulous energy. She's very upbeat, very positive. And, you know, she's going out and she's doing these shows. And then you've got people that are saying, oh, you know, bringing a witch into it is a bad idea. You know, I see that kind of weirdness in the paranormal shows, because my husband, who claims to not believe any of this, is an avid paranormal investigation show watcher. He claims he's, quote, recording them for me, but the man watches them when I am not home, and he's got hours of them recorded on the DVR. So I know that deep in his heart, he really does believe, and some of the things that he has brought up is, oh, they were doing witchcraft, and it brought in this bad spirit, and, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, they're dabbling. They're not really witches. They don't know what they're doing. Or, you know, oh, they brought in a witch and, you know, she's saying that she can't clear it out. And now I'm starting to see, here's the other thing I want to ask you about, because I don't do paranormal investigations. I would like to. I'd like to start doing them in the area. There are a million and one places in Denton County and in Texas that have a rich paranormal or occult history that I would love to get into. But, one of the things that I am seeing is, like, there is some contradiction between the quote-unquote experts they get on these shows. Some of them are saying, oh, you know, if you're Catholic and you bring in a Native American shaman, that's not going to work because that spirit isn't going to listen to this, you know, person of another faith. And I think that's absolute bullshit. Sorry, I don't know if I can say that out loud. It just occurred to me. It's BS. That is not true. To me, an energy is an energy. And if you are doing something, whatever your vein of faith is, if you are doing something to clear that energy, because they're saying that sage does not always work. And that is true. Sage does not always work. But I think it goes back to what you mentioned just a moment ago about it doesn't work because the work isn't continued. And that actually ties into my latest video for the Purple Broom that I'm going to be posting later today about putting your work into it. Mm-hmm. And, absolutely. You know, people want a quick fix. So talk about that. Talk about why or what some of your experiences have been like with, you know, knowing whether it's
as
a negative
far as with, human entity. Cleansing.
Well, you know, you see all this talk about, oh, it was, you know, once a person who's moved on but can't really move on. Like, they've transitioned, they've passed, but they're still stuck or tied to the place. Versus, oh, this is demonic. Because you hear that all the time. If you get scratched, it's demonic. I don't think so. I think it's somebody just irritated you're in their space. You know, so you hear that a lot. So how frequently do you actually encounter demonic versus just an angry
I don't encounter something I don't encounter something that's demonic a lot. We do find spirits that, you know, are kind of negative in a way, but I've never found something that was so demonic that, you know, it hurt a lot of people. Yes, people do get hurt. Let me just say that. People right. do get scratched. You know, people, they do have
things. I'm not denying people get scratched, hit, pushed, knocked over. But again, how frequently, you know, I mean, it seems like the impulse is
it's demonic. Not as often as you would think. You know, right. you don't have the demonic. You don't have the demonic as much as you think.
That's what I figure, and that's what annoys me about these shows, because they make it seem like everything is demonic in nature, and I don't think you really encounter demonic that frequently. I think it tends to be more just a negative energy that's occupying that space, or an angry individual who has moved on and doesn't know why they've moved on, or didn't feel ready to move on, or isn't ready to get out of that space, and is irritated by the fact that people are in their space that they can't interact with. Mm-hmm. I liken it a lot to, you know, I work with a lot of individuals who are autistic, and, you know, what I have found is that a lot of these, particularly children, have these behavioral outbursts because they can't communicate effectively and they get frustrated. And I sometimes wonder if some of the scratching and pushing isn't just due to general frustration at this point. You know, I can see you. Why in the world can't you see me? And, you know, don't you hear me? Kind of thing. What's your thought on that?
When it comes to, first of all, let me say that when it comes to some negative influences, they are and can be low level demons or demon wannabes.
Right. I'm not denying that.
Yeah. So when it comes to children, though, children are the easiest for them to target, or people who easiest for them to target. They have what we call a bright light above them and around them. So those energies, those spirits are attracted to that. And that's a reason why some people have a lot of paranormal activity. And that's why some people don't have a lot of paranormal activity. It really just depends. You can always tell who has this very bright light around them, because they're the ones that seem to be the one that's targeted the most. Now, that's not always the case. Sometimes, like I said, it can be past traumas that they've had in their life and haven't dealt with. And those traumas can be from, you know, having an abortion and not working through the energies of that, not working through all of those issues of how you felt. But it can also not just affect you, it can affect other people. It's been proven that somebody has had this very, very thing happen to them, but instead of the scratches appearing on them, it actually appeared on their daughter, on her daughter. And when the daughter would go to her father's, everything would stop. It was only when she would come back happen. So they dealt with that issue, everything stopped. But it's the same way with these kids. You know, they're a bright light for these beings, and so that's what they go after. They gotcha. Really just want their attention for one reason or another, or want somebody in that household to realize they exist.
Exactly. And that's kind of what I was, you know, saying is, or thinking is that, you know, how much of this negative behavior and the scratching and the hovering over you in your sleep and these, you know, big dramatic things that you hear about are due to just a general, hey, I'm here, acknowledge that I'm here, versus a real aggression. And again, it's because I see that a lot with kids who can't communicate well. You know, they act out because they're frustrated, not because they're necessarily bad kids. And so I think a lot of times that gets misinterpreted and it's not talked about a lot. So I was curious about that. But again, I mean, I haven't gone on any paranormal investigations, so I haven't, you know, encountered anything of my... I mean, not well.
We get phone calls, and that's one of the things. We get phone calls a lot where children are being targeted, and they don't even have to have an issue. These kids are just being, you know, they wake up in the middle of the night, and they won't sleep in their rooms. They're afraid to turn out the light. They keep saying there's monsters in their closet. I mean, there's a number of different things that we hear. Well,
I think we all know that children are a natural draw. Their life force is very strong. And, absolutely. You know, I just, again, my point being that I don't think that a lot of what you see as negative behavior is necessarily because the spirit is evil or demonic or even a bat. I mean, it can be, certainly, and you want to be cautious. But I wonder how much of that aggressive behavior is just due to, I can see you, but you can't see me. What's the problem? And children, I think they gravitate towards children because children, I think, see spirits far more readily than adults do. We have learned to cut that out in a lot of ways because, you know, you learn to just shut it off. And Absolutely. Kids, I think, just naturally, and Matt talks about this in his book, and he talked about it yesterday at the festival, that, you know, kids are far more naturally open to the spirit realm because they haven't learn to shut it off yet. They're still using their imaginations daily. And I agree with that. But, you know, I kind of feel bad for some of these spirits because I'm like, well, did anybody really ask it, you know, or try to, you know, sometimes they do, you know, and I'm not saying that there aren't bad spirits because certainly there are. And there are certainly, you know, otherworldly kinds of energies that I think are negative. I mean, our world is made up of positive and negative, light and dark, and balance and so forth. But, you know, sometimes I sit there and scratch my head and go, why do they just automatically assume, you know? But talk a little bit about your experiences as a medium and what that brings to you personally. How do you, I don't want to say control, but I guess that would be it. I mean, as a medium, you are able to communicate with those who have passed on, who are no longer here.
Correct.
And do you actually see them? Do you hear them? Do you sense them? You know, how does that present for you personally? And then how do you,
my connection,
how do you stop it when you don't want it to happen? You know, like in Sixth Sense, the poor kid, he just couldn't not see them. You know, he knew they were there. They knew he knew they were there. And I think that automatically makes you a draw too. When they know you can see them, they come to you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You have to set boundaries, you know, just like with anything else, you have to set boundaries. You know, it's,
so how do you set those boundaries? Do you tell them, I'm not looking at you, or I'm not talking with you right now? Or, you know, do you put up protections, witchy type of protection?
When it's time for me to go to sleep, I'm like, okay, this is my space. This is my time to go to sleep. You know, I'm not going to be communicating with you at this time.
Okay. So you're physically telling them,
yes,
we're done for the day. Thank you.
Correct. Move along. Absolutely. Absolutely. Because if not, they will be in there wanting my attention. I mean, I've had a spirit stand next to my bed and say, hey, and not only did I hear it, but my husband heard it.
That's,
I mean, I literally
hilarious.
Thought one of my girls walked into the room and my girls weren't there, but you know, there was something else there.
That is hilarious. I had a...
cousins have passed over. They've come to say their last goodbye. So, you know, yeah. I have that happen to me a lot. It's very common. But at an investigation, it actually starts way before I even get there.
Mm-hmm.
Coming. Yeah, I try to do some type of meditation before I even go to any location. And when I was taking the phone calls, I no longer do that. I have another member who does that. Because everybody just wanted to talk to me. They didn't want to talk about anything else. They just wanted to get to me. Stop that. We've had to have somebody else to take our phone calls. And so before that was happening, though, when I would talk to people, I would already start to give them messages from who was there. I was able to give them a description of their home. I was able to give them a description of what their loved ones look like. I mean, there were so many different things coming in. So my investigation actually started way before we even got there. And then when we got there, I was still able to bring through that was connecting to them. For me, it's not just about connecting to what's in the house. They also, I also connect them to loved ones who has passed that's not in their home. I help them get closure. I mean, there's a number of different things that goes on. So it's not just about the investigation. It's actually about the person getting closure.
Well, and Jen, I'm going to just take a second, kind of apologize. I don't know if it's just happening on my end, but you keep cutting out periodically. So if it's cutting out, I apologize. But I mean, it's like it just goes silent for a second and then picks you back up. So if I say, oh, hold on, I apologize. Well, and that was one of the things that I wanted to ask you about as well, is that when I was younger, I could physically see spirits. I mean, and it was weird. It still happens to me now, but I cut it off for a long time because I would tell my mother I could see these people and she thought I was a Fruit Loop. I mean, she really thought I was crazy. And except that she knew I talked to people and she would hear other voices. So she would come in the room and it was just me. So I learned to let that go. And of course, now I'm working to try to gain some of that back. And I do, I still hear things. I sense things. I have found that I'm slowly starting to see things again periodically, but it's strange the way it manifests. And I'll give you an example. I went to a local metaphysical shop with a Lady Grave Dancer and another friend of ours. And after we were done shopping, we went to this little cafe across the street. And I'm looking around the room and there's this old man sitting at a table. And there was somebody sitting across from him, but the other person wasn't eating. And I'm going, And there was, you know, I can usually tell the difference between who's living and who's not. But I thought, well, okay, that's a little unusual because he was so very vivid. And he's just looking at the old man, and I'm like, well, that's really strange. They weren't talking. The old man didn't acknowledge him in any way. And he looked at me, and I looked at him, and it was the weirdest feeling. And then I happened to look, because I was sitting kind of with my back to them, and Lady Grave Dancer and her friend were sitting across from me. And I look at them, and I realize they're looking over there as well. And T goes, do you think he can see him? And I went, oh, so I looked back again and I was like, okay, so now I know, because I didn't say anything to them. And the old man happened to look up at that moment and smile. And we all went, yeah, he can see him.
Wow.
You know, it was strange because I hadn't had an experience like that in a long time. And so because I didn't say anything to them, I didn't know if it was just me or if, you know, so it was confirming to me that I was actually seeing it. But I hear things far more often than I see them now. And, you know, I don't consider myself a medium, but I used to be able to talk to people. And so if someone was wanting to regain that skill, because here's my question. Do you think people are born mediums and only certain people are born mediums? Or do you feel that mediumship is a skill that can be learned and taught?
I think that you can develop your mediumship to a degree. Like everyone has the ability to connect with their loved ones in spirit. Not everyone is able to deliver messages to others. And gotcha. I think that's the difference.
Okay.
You know, it's we are all born with psychic abilities. So we all have the ability to see all of those things. But you just need to be able to deliver the messages.
Okay. So talk about how old were you when you realized that you could not only see and communicate with the spirit realm, but could pass messages? Was it something that you just knew kind of instinctively, or was it something that somebody came to you and said, I need you to pass on this message?
It was just something that I did. I didn't, for me, I thought like I was ever, like there was no difference to what I did to anybody else. I would, you know, I would go to work and say, hey, by the way, this is going to happen later, or you need to go call this person, or, you know, this is going to happen later in the day, you know, those kind of things. I mean, it was just right. natural. And so it wouldn't be until about 2010 when my cousin passed away that I would actually realize that I was different. And so that was a turning point for me. I was never told, oh, that's your imagination or anything else. So I never shut that off. So for me, it was just like, it's not something that I actually had to work hard at doing.
Gotcha. Okay. And so again, that first experience when you, here's the thing. And for a lot of us, I think it just happens naturally. Like we're automatically kind of open to that more than maybe other people around us. Mm-hmm. But how, I guess what I'm trying to figure out is at what point did you know that you could definitely pass on messages? I get what you're saying.
At my computer, and I was talking, and I didn't know that her husband, I didn't know them at all, even though they lived in the area. They had moved away, and I was telling her things about her husband that I would never know.
Gotcha. Okay. So it was a definite kaboom kind of experience.
Yeah. Yeah. And I had been doing that all along, though, but I just never connected the dots as to what it was I was doing.
Right. Now, did you have anyone, once you kind of figured out that you were open to this, did you have anyone mentor you? Did you take classes in mediumship to learn how to set those boundaries or how to make this a more powerful tool for yourself and others? Or was it something you've totally developed on your own?
I would read books, but then I would take what I learned and make it my own. So basically, although I read, I kind of just did it on my own. There wasn't, you know, classes, or I didn't sit in group sessions or mediumship circles. I didn't do any of that.
Okay. What about now?
I pretty much developed on my own.
Do you lead or teach classes yourself? Do you mentor people in mediumship now? Or is that just something that you don't want to do, don't feel you need to do, don't feel called to do? Or do you?
I do. Okay. That's actually one of my strong points is teaching and mentoring. And okay. I teach psychic abilities, and I also teach mediumship.
Okay, so what platform do you teach this in? Is it something you teach only in person? Do you have online classes?
I actually work one-on-one with individuals.
Do you? Okay.
Yeah.
There you go. I was going to say plug yourself.
Yeah, it depends. It depends on, you know, I work one-on-one with people, but I can also do it in a group setting. And you can find out more information about that on my website at intuitivejenhodgson.com.
There you go. Intuitivejenhodgson.com. Check that out. Now, let's talk about, we're actually going to talk about this on Witches of the Moon later on, but this is something I know virtually nothing about. I know what it is and I know how it's supposed to work, but I don't know how you do it or how you even know you do this or how this, the mechanics of how this works, I guess would be the proper way of putting it. So automatic writing, I would assume that automatic writing is something that is done strictly by someone who is a medium, whether you realize you are or not, right? It's a spirit coming through you to communicate in a way. So how did you discover automatic writing, or how did you come into doing automatic writing? And, you know, is it a tool that you use often? Is it something you reserve for certain situations? What are some of the positives and negatives to using automatic writing?
For me, I really can't say I've had a negative experience using automatic writing, but I think anybody can do automatic writing. I don't think it's just for mediums. I think you can use automatic writing for connecting to your higher self.
Excellent idea.
it really, it's more of channeling than it is anything else. It's no different than really channeling a spirit. And there are two different ways that you can channel a spirit, which is a semi-trance or a full trance. And I don't full trance, I semi-trance. And so
I want to hold on 1 second there, because you just tapped into something that Matt talked about in his talk yesterday. He has a new book out, and it's a great book. If you haven't checked it out, check it out. One of the things that he mentioned in his talk was that he talks about the alpha brainwave state. And I want to kind of clarify this for the audience, because there's two types of brainwave states that we get into when you are meditating and working on spiritual work or psychic work. One of them is alpha, and I believe the other is theta brainwave states. Now, right. I want to make that distinction here. What you're saying is that you get into the alpha brainwave state, which is a light meditative state that opens you up to the fifth dimension and higher levels, but doesn't take you into the super deep. Theta is when you are in a full-on trance, which can actually open you out for other experiences, if I remember correctly, if I'm remembering what I read correctly. Theta can actually open you up to, like, you are outside of your own consciousness at that point. In an alpha brainwave state, it's like a lighter state. You're still aware of what's going on around you, but you're tapped into that psychic link. Whereas with theta, you are journeying, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So just for the listeners who may not be familiar with that terminology, so you're talking about entering an alpha brainwave state, much like you do when you read a book or something like that. You're kind of not there, but there. Okay.
Correct.
Okay. So you do not go into the theta brainwave state.
No.
Is that by choice, or is that because you don't want to? Talk about why you don't use the theta state.
That's just a choice of mine. It takes a lot more out of you if you go into that state versus the other.
It is something associated with shamanism and things like that. A lot of shamans utilize the theta brainwave state. Gotcha. Okay. So automatic writing, you're in an alpha brainwave state. Talk about what that process feels like to you and how it works.
It really, I guess the way that I explain it, and I guess it's how I live my life every day, it's almost like I'm watching myself do something, even though I'm physically the one doing it. I don't know how else to describe it, but that way.
So almost an out-of-body experience, kind of like when you first learn to astral travel and you leave, you could kind of see yourself and you know you're there, exactly. But you're...
So it's like, you know what you're doing, but yet you have no control over it, you know?
Okay. Now, at that alpha brainwave state, when you're tapped into that person, how did you first start automatic writing? And talk about some of your experiences with automatic writing. Like, what kinds of things tend to come through? Does it tend to be messages for specific people or things? Or is it more you're prompting the spirit for questions and it's answering you?
What happens is if I'm doing a reading, because unless I'm wanting answers for like my higher self or that kind of thing. But normally I do this when I'm wanting to connect to the other side for another person. And so I receive messages for that person, but I will also receive information, although I don't actually have to do automatic writing to actually receive all of this information. It's just something that sometimes I choose to do. And this information, you write it down because otherwise you don't remember it. You know, that's the key thing too, is that when I'm doing I don't remember anything that I have just told you. So it's important. But in that state, when you're doing automatic writing, you're just writing anything and everything that comes, whether it be names, dates, ages, places, whatever it is, messages, you write it all down. And the way that you first start doing this is basically just getting yourself into a meditative state, stating what your intentions are, and then putting your hand with a pencil, or you can do it by computer too. You can just sit at your computer and do this as well. Just put your hands on the keyboard. You know, you can start tapping one letter if you want, and then just let it go from there. The same way with writing, you can start out just making a little, you know, an E or an I or whatever it is that you want to do, or you can just hold your hand still and eventually it will start writing once you connect with the right spirit. But you have to be able to let go and not fear the process, because if you fear the process, it'll never happen.
Right. And that's kind of what we say about anything within the craft itself is, you know, you have to put your mind into it. If you doubt it, it's not going to happen. Right. If you fear it, it's not going to happen for you. So let's get to know Jen. Talk to me about a little bit of what your life was like growing up with these abilities, you know, when, and kind of where I'm wanting to go with that is, if you've listened to Raven Grimassi's podcast, they did a two-part episode called In His Own Words, and I'm really glad they did that, because I love to get to know people in terms of what their childhoods were like. You know, did you talk to spirits a lot as a child? Did you, you know, have any, you know, what were the positives and negatives to that? What were your parents' responses to some of your ability to kind of, you know, when I would have a predictive dream, I would tell my mom, hey, we're going to see this person. He's going to be wearing this and we're going to be standing here. And then it would happen. And I would go, hey, Mom, look at that. She would freak. And so I learned very quickly to keep that to myself. What was it like for you growing up?
I don't of my childhood. What I do remember is before the age of 7, being taught by a Native American different plants, about different herbs and that kind of thing. And then my next memory that I have is from the time when I was 7 till the age of like 16, I would actually have this woman, this older woman. She wore a blue dress. She had brown hair. She would visit me like almost on a nightly basis, but her energy was so strong that it actually, and I would end up, my sister and I shared a room, so I would end up sleeping with my sister because I didn't know what else. And so I never told anybody in that, you know, I just kind of dealt with it on my own, which is, I guess the reason why I didn't tell anyone is because pretty much growing up, I pretty much did deal with whatever on my own. There was no, hey, Mom, can you help me with this or whatever. I just pretty much did it on my own. So that happened. And then once I moved out of that room, I actually switched rooms with my brother, my youngest brother. And then it would begin again when I moved out. And so, you know, I didn't know what to call it. But no matter what, you know, I would say, hey, you know, if I have dreams about you, the chances are pretty good they're going to come true. And so people would say, please don't have a dream about me. Or if you do, let me know what it is. So it was that kind of thing. So people were accepting, although there were times that I would get strange looks from others. But I can't say that it was ever a negative thing. I never had a negative experience. I guess I was always just a happy-go-lucky kid and never let other things bother me as much.
Right. Very good. Well, let's talk a little bit about how you came to your path as a witch and when that, what that manifested, how that manifested for you.
Well, again, you know, I was always searching and just, I don't know. I just started reading and things started to fall into place. And I started to, okay, well, this is why this and this and this and this never fit. And this does. It was just kind of one of those things. I guess I never really struggled with, you know, I never questioned it. You know, it just felt right. And that's just basically how it happened. I mean.
Well, what was your, what was your first book?
Oh my gosh, my first book.
Your first witchy book, what was it? And how did you pick it up? Was it the cover, the title? Was it something someone suggested?
I would have to say the very first book that I read. Well, we were doing, my husband and I were doing an online talk show called Your Life Matters with Jen and Steve. And we actually had the pleasure of interviewing Judica Ellis. Oh, and yeah. So I got to read everybody's books. And so that just kind of started me there on a path. And I read book after book after book after book.
Okay, I got to ask you, how did you get her on your show? Like, did you just, you know, how did you hear of her? Was it, you know, talk to me about that show. That's fascinating. Like, how did you, you know, was it something that somebody said, oh, you got to check this lady out. And then you interviewed her and then you read the book or, you know.
No. That's how what happened was we were doing an online radio show and my husband approached me and said, hey, do you want to do a podcast or an, you know, an online show? And I'm like, yeah, but if we do one, I want it to be something that has meaning, something that other people can relate to. I don't want it to be this run of the mill stuff. So we interviewed authors and I mean, there were some people who were. But there were some websites that I had access to, and I don't even remember how I got access to those, but I had those at my fingertips, and there was a list of people that you could interview. And so I would research these people, and I would reach out to them, and I would contact them, and they would send me their books, and I would read their book, because that's what the shows were based on, was their book. And so it was an hour show. It was uninterrupted. We had a ton of viewers. We didn't have anybody to sponsor. My husband didn't want to have sponsorship, which is why it never went anywhere.
Well, but you would think with a ton of viewers, you would it would go somewhere.
I sent her a message and we went from there. Yeah.
Wow. That's exciting.
Yeah. We had thousands of people watching on a sometimes like 5 or 6, and it was absolutely fascinating. So that's kind of how I got started and was reading her books, and it just, like I said, it just snowballed from there. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's like this.
And talk about where you are now on your path. Like, you know, do you work with the deity? Are you polytheistic? You know, because like, for those of the audience that are not familiar, Jen and I are both hosts on a collaborative YouTube channel called Witches of the Moon. And we have a host on there who is our Saturday host in Nimbus River. He is absolutely phenomenal. He was a host on the show a few seasons back, and then he had to leave the show. And here's the funniest thing, Jen. I was thinking about him a lot. I was really missing his friendship, and I was really wishing that he would make a comeback, because he got off Facebook, he got off YouTube, his wife had a child, and, you know, they were focused on that, which I understand, but I kept thinking about him and thinking about him and thinking about him, and how much with Houston and Quentin leaving the channel, I really didn't want another female host, because there's so much female energy. I liked having a man's perspective to kind of balance things, and mm-hmm. I'll be darn tootin' if he didn't write me out of the blue and say, I'd like to come back to the channel. That, folks, is manifesting.
Absolutely.
But also, you know, he is now saying he is not pagan, which I always thought he was. So are you pagan? What is your background?
My background... I grew up going to different churches, went to Christian churches and Methodist church and, you know, everything else. But honestly, I went there just to hang out with my friends and the fact that my mom made me go type of thing. It wasn't
that
because...
sounds familiar.
Yeah, it wasn't because it was like I wanted to go or anything. And
it wasn't really resonating with you.
It just wasn't my thing. You know, I don't like somebody telling me what I have to do, how I have to think. I was just actually having this conversation with my brother, about, you know, I don't want someone telling me what I have to think or how I have to think, or I have to do this and I have to believe this way. It's just nonsense.
Right. I get you. It's the dogma, you know, which is part of the reason why I've stayed solitary and I haven't really joined a coven. I talked with both Corianne and with Patsy Cabot about that. You know, I'm interested in the idea of learning from prominent witches like Laurie and Christopher, and, you know, but at the same time, I'm hesitant to involve myself fully in a coven, because I think it becomes dogmatic, which is one of the reasons why I left the church in the first place. uh-huh. right? Now you have to live by their quote-unquote code of ethics. And I'm not saying that you don't need a code of ethics. I mean, everybody needs their own code of ethics. But, and I understand standardization, because it's the same thing with a standardized test. You know, how do you compare one to the other? You know, what if my code of ethics says I can go out and take pot shots at all the people, you know, that don't look like me? Okay, that's, you know, my code of ethics says that's fine. You know, well, it's not, obviously not fine, right? Right. So I get the point of we need to have a standard for behavior. Okay, I get that. But I think that anybody with half a brain and certainly half a heart understands that we're all human beings worthy of dignity, love, and respect. And until you give me a reason to not have respect for you or trust in you, I'm going to, regardless of what you look like, sound like, act, you know, I won't say act like, because it's your actions, right, that tell me how you really are. So, you know, I hate the idea that I have to live under somebody else's, you know, rule of three and all of that. So how about yourself? Where do you stand on that line?
Well, I know a lot of people, believe in karma and all of that stuff. And that's just not my thing. I don't follow the rule of three. I do agree everybody needs their own set of ethics. And I think there are some things that are just common sense. And, you know, I trust people until they give me a reason not to.
Right.
And I don't judge people based on what they look like or what they believe or what they don't believe. You know, that's entirely up to them. It's not my path.
Right. I think you and I
responsible at the end of the day for what I do and my actions and what I say.
Exactly. Self-responsibility and being an adult. You know, I think that people today are so spoon-fed everything that they expect to be spoon-fed everything. And they need that, because if they don't have that, they don't know how to act. I mean, I know that sounds ridiculous, but that's really kind of how I feel. Not to say that everybody that joins a coven doesn't know how to act without having a dog. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is I think there are people out there that feel they need that, you know, in order to define who they are and what they do and to give that verbalization to other people. And I guess maybe you and I are of the vein that, you know, we don't feel we need somebody else's explanation of who we are and how to act. We can do that ourselves. Absolutely. But that's not to say that there's anything wrong with joining a coven or any of that. I'm not saying that either, because for some people it clicks and it works and it's great and I'm fabulous,
right? And there are some people who need that structure. Yeah. And I'm just not one of those people who need that structure. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, Jen, one other thing that I wanted to talk with you about, and I want to make sure we have enough time. We've got about 15 minutes left in the broadcast. So I wanted to talk with you a little bit about how you, I'll ask you about that later. I don't want to do anything that's going to be personal on air here, but talk about how you got into paranormal investigations with your husband. Was it something you guys decided together to do? Was it something somebody asked you to come do? How did that come about? Because you have a paranormal group. So talk about that a little bit.
Sure. Like I said, it goes right back to the podcast or the online show that we were doing. And I wanted to interview a group from Indianapolis. And we did that. They invited us to come and see them at Hannah House, which is a place where you can actually, and I'm not sure if you can do investigations anymore, but you could at one time do investigations and do a walkthrough. It was around October and they were doing like a little meet and greet type thing. So we went and did that, and they invited us to a place to go on an investigation with them. And we did that for a while. And it just didn't work out. We had different views than what they did. And so we decided to create our own group. And we've been doing that ever since. So around 2010, we started doing that. And we've been We've done over 100 investigations, actually.
Okay, so do you have all the fancy equipment, like the REM pod and the cameras and the SLS and all of that stuff, or no?
We do have a lot of equipment. We do have some fancy equipment. Personally, I'm not one that likes to use a lot of the equipment. If you want to give me the thermal imaging camera, I think that's great. Not for any other reason than I can tell where the cold spots are. So we know that if somebody's standing over there and they're like, okay, it's cooler over here, well, it's because the side of the wall needs some insulation, you know, that right. kind of thing.
It's kind of a great information for you then, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, because I told my dad, my dad has an associate's degree in electronics. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. It's kind of cutting out, so I can't tell where you're pausing and where it's cutting out in the middle of what you're saying. Yeah. Sorry.
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
I was going to say, my dad has an associate's degree in electronics. He's always tinkered. So I told my dad, I want you to build me a REM pod. And I sent him a picture, and he immediately writes me back and says, email me a schematic and a parts list. So I'm going to have my dad build me a REM pod. I just need to find a schematic.
Oh, yay. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that at all.
Well, it used to be a photography bug, too, so you could probably figure out the camera side of things as well. But, you know, we'll start with a REM pod. Are you here? Beep!
Yeah. Those are, you know, I have seen those used. That's one of the things that we don't use, but we do have some other things that we use. One of the things that I like to use that doesn't cost really anything at all is a bell. And we actually did this at an investigation where we strung them across the doorway, and we actually had something going past it hitting the so that was really fascinating. And you know, a lot of times your cameras, even though you think you're going to capture something, you really don't capture as much on camera as you think you would. These spirits are very intelligent, and we have where we think we're going to capture them, they will actually move the camera out of their view so they can pass, and then sometimes they move it back. It's quite interesting. Or they'll move the cords.
Yeah, I like the use of the flashlights.
Recorder shut off. Flashlights are interesting.
Especially with the timing, when they light up right when they ask a question. But I'm always kind of skeptical of that because...
Absolutely.
I have little, you know, battery-powered candles, you know, that will turn themselves on in the middle of the night. And it's, you know, I have it turned just where it's barely off. So, you know, is it just that there's a movement? You know, the house tends to settle. So is it the movement of the house settling that we can't detect, but it's enough to cause that connection that's making that light up? And I think their view of why that's legitimate is because it's happening at a time when a question is presented, which I can kind of get that.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. It's one thing if you see it happening on command. But then again, when you're seeing it on TV, you kind of have to take it with a grain of salt.
Right. Everything you see on TV, you have to take with a grain of salt, which is one of my concerns with some of the shows that you see is a lot of people just delve right into that. Like, there's always talks about, oh, they brought in a Ouija board, so they allowed this bad spirit in. You know, there's good and bad with everything. So, and I understand that it's the negative stuff that gets people's attention. But to me, that only adds to people's fear and lack of understanding that a spirit board is a tool that I think of it like a gun. Okay. I'm in Texas. I own guns. I love guns. I go to the range pretty frequently, but it's a tool and you have to know how to use it. You don't wave it around at people, you know, willy nilly. You know, there's rules for it. It is, number one, always loaded even when it's not. There's always a round in the chamber even when it's not. You don't aim it at anything you don't intend to kill or shoot. So it's the same thing with a Ouija board, you know, or a spirit board of any kind. You have to understand that what you're working with may not be friendly. You know, there's good and bad everywhere. And, you know, or positive, negative, or, you know, beneficial, baneful, you know, everywhere
So you have to be conscious of that and know how to discern the difference. And I think a lot of people just pick them up and dabble with it. And they don't talk about the, you know, how it's used positively. Does that make sense?
It does.
They never talk about the positive interactions people have using these tools. They talk about the dabblers, and dabbling is always dangerous.
Right. You know, you can open yourself up using anything. You can take a glass of water and use that as a portal if you want. Mm-hmm. There is, I mean, those get such a bad rap, but it's really just the tool itself that you're using to opening yourself up to communicate with the other side.
Right, exactly. And I think that that's something that you know, I mean, I understand it's Hollywood, but Hollywood is remarkably influential. And I think that they are somewhat irresponsible in their representation of witchcraft, paranormal investigation, and that kind of thing when you look at how it's represented on these mainstream shows that come off as reality TV, like it or not. I mean, they're interviewing quote unquote experts. The experts sometimes are presenting contradictory information based on their own experiences. And I feel that unfortunately working with spirit is an industry that is an industry when it shouldn't be. Does that make sense? It's something that everybody has the ability to do, but they make it seem like these few people have all the knowledge and you're just the schmuck watching it on TV.
Right.
And that, you know, that there are certain people with quote unquote gifts and they don't understand there. They don't drive home the fact that everyone can do what these people are doing. But it takes work. And again, you know, that goes back to what my video is going to be about later today, is that a lot of people don't want to put the work into it. They want the benefits, but they don't want to put the work into it. And when they find out that, gosh, this isn't easy and it does take real work, they step back from it. And that's when they become dabblers. And they may have opened a portal and now they don't know how to close it, or they don't close it properly and then wonder why things happen.
Correct.
And they don't talk about that a lot on those shows. So... Well, Jen, I appreciate you taking your time to talk with me today and to share a little bit about your mediumship. Why don't you go ahead and give your website again in case people want to come and check you out?
Sure. It's intuitivejenhodgson.com.
Go ahead and spell that out, because I think sometimes Hodgson, people think there's an E in there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's intuitivejenhod, as in David, G as in girl, son.com.
There you go. All right. Well, thank you again, Jen, for sharing a little bit about your mediumship. I'd like to bring you back on at some point and have you talk strictly about mediumship and developing those skills sometime. So we'll have to sit down and talk about that.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us again. And thank you all for listening to The Purple Mystic. And I hope to hear back from everybody soon.